So my name is Mia Pappas. I'm an assistant professor at the University of Delaware, and my research focus is looking at obesity and predictors of obesity in vulnerable populations. And so this morning I'm going to talk to you about a study that we recently conducted looking at obesity and predictors of obesity in a large national sample of kids with and without disabilities. I have no relationships to disclose at this time. We had to put that in there. Okay, so this morning what I'm going to do is discuss kind of three major points. So first, I'm just going to describe the prevalence of obesity within this sample. It's a large national cohort, and I'll go into the details of the sample. And then I'm going to next examine diet, physical activity, and unhealthy dietary behaviors and the prevalence of these factors among adolescents with and without disabilities. And finally, we evaluated the association between these risk factors and obesity for kids with and without disability and looked at disability as a moderating factor within our models. So I think we're all aware of the crisis of childhood obesity that we're facing as a nation, and actually throughout the world. Overall rates still remain high, so the last NHANES rate sort of produced an 18% prevalence rate of obesity among kids 6 to 11 years of age, and a 21% prevalence rate of obesity among kids who are 12 to 19 years of age. And we know disparities in obesity exist across race, ethnic, gender, and socioeconomic lines, and they've been studied extensively in the literature, but what we know less about is the prevalence of obesity among children and adolescents with disabilities. And so these data from the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, sort of combining the years 2003 to 2008, really highlight the increased prevalence of obesity among kids, and this is all kids aged 2 to 17, where obesity rates for children with disabilities are 38% higher than for children without. So you see that 22% of kids, so almost 1 in 5 kids with a disability are obese versus 16% of kids without. And when we say obesity in this context, we're talking about a body mass index, a gender and age-adjusted body mass index that's above the 95th percentile. So the expectation would be you would see about 5% in this category, 16% of kids without disabilities, and 22% of kids with. So this increase may be due to several factors, including for kids with disabilities, you know, we see differences in body composition, so it might be due to differences in a loss of lean muscle mass versus fat mass. We also know that exposure to medications that are known to increase appetite, such as certain anti-convulsant, anti-inflammatory medications, antidepressant medications, all sort of lead to an increase in appetite, which may be causing this increase in obesity. We just saw from Kylie, and I think there's sort of evidence that shows that limited opportunities for physical activity exist, and there's increased sedentary time among these kids. And there's some evidence of a possible over-permissiveness among parents with respect to dietary choices and maybe unhealthy dietary choices, and also restrictions of physical activity opportunities from a parent due to possibly fear of injury or lack of knowledge. So as children transition into adolescence, what we know is that they attempt to increase their autonomy, right? They want to start making choices for themselves, and this is no different for kids with disabilities than kids with than typically developing peers. But there's a lack of evidence that's really focused on the prevalence of obesity and these risk factors during that transitional time to adolescence, right? And this might be a key time to help kids develop that autonomy and develop the choices that they're going to make for themselves. And it might be important for kids with disabilities who might sort of be faced with limitations in those choices that are available to them. Therefore, to sort of address this gap that exists, we conducted an analysis. So we used data from the Youth Risk Behavior Surveillance Survey. We used the data from 2011. So for those of you who might not know, this is a national survey that is conducted biannually, so every 2 years, in high schools in all 50 states in the U.S. and the District of Columbia. It's conducted by the Centers for Disease Control. It's a cross-sectional study. So it's a cross-sectional survey that's a representative sample of kids in grades 9 through 12. And the data that I'm going to show you is focusing on data from 4 states, because the disability questions are an optional module within the YRBS. And so in 2011, these 4 states collected the data on disability. All study participants within this sample have to be able to answer the questions without assistance in these 4 states. And students are asked 2 questions. So these are the 2 questions for the YRBS that we use to define disability status. And so the first question has to do with a physical disability. So do you have any physical disabilities or long-term health problems? And long-term meant 6 months or more. And adolescents answered either yes or no. And then they were asked if they had any long-term, again, meaning 6 months or more, emotional problems or learning disabilities. And if they said yes to either one of these questions, we classified the adolescent as having a disability. And then if they said no to both, then we classified them as not. Obesity status was obtained from self-reported weights and heights. So all of the information on the YRBS is the self-report. So obesity was obtained from self-reported weights and heights, and we computed gender and age, sex and age specific BMI percentiles based on the CDC growth charts from the year 2000, and then defined obesity as a BMI greater than or equal to the 95th percentile. In our study, 1 in 5 adolescents reported a physical, emotional, or learning disability. Half of the students were female. Half of them were either in the 9th or 10th grade. Majority were between 15 and 17 years of age, and the majority were white. There were no differences in the demographic characteristics between those with and without a disability. So what we found, I think that's consistent with what we've sort of heard and what we know, is that adolescents in this sample are more likely to be obese. And I think we now know that adolescents with disabilities have a greater prevalence of obesity. So here they're about 1.7 times more likely to be obese. Kylie mentioned that in the ASD population, they're about 2 times more likely to be obese. So it's about 16% prevalence in the sample versus 10%. Now these rates, these prevalence rates are a little bit lower than the data I showed you from NHANES. In NHANES, they actually weigh and measure the kids, and here is self-report. We know self-reported data usually underestimates weights and heights. So. But we still see that increase in obesity among kids with disabilities. What was interesting was that almost half of the kids in the study were actively trying to lose weight. And kids with disabilities were more likely to also state that they were actively trying to lose weight. So these kids are more likely to be obese, they're more likely to recognize it, and to try to be doing something to lose weight. So we asked, okay, well, what kind of things might you be doing to lose weight? So this, we figured we were kind of focusing on physical activity and diet initially to see if kids with disabilities, maybe they were attempting to try to be more physically active. What we found, so this is looking at days per week and physical activity of at least 60 minutes. So at least 60 minutes a day. About 52% of kids without disabilities, but 38% of kids with disabilities were exercising 60 minutes a day, or participating in physical activity 60 minutes a day for 5 days a week or more. So we see that decrease in physical activity rates that we kind of expect from previous literature. And if you look at kids who were physically active 60 minutes a day for no days of the week, right? So 20% of kids with disabilities were not participating in any physical activity compared to 13% of those without disabilities. When dietary intakes were investigated, we found that this is a weekly dietary intake. So this is consume at least 1 serving of fruit per week or one vegetable per week, or one green salad, or drink at least one 100% fruit juice per week. So there were small differences, not as large as those differences in physical activity, but small differences, but they were still statistically significant differences between those with and without disability. So kids with disability are stating that they are less likely to consume at least one fruit per week or one vegetable per week. So we see limits in physical activity, we see poor healthy dietary choices, and then, most surprising, what we examined next were kind of these, we call them unhealthy weight loss behaviors. So there are three questions that ask about what you're trying to do to lose weight. And so when we looked at these unhealthy weight loss behaviors, we found that kids with disabilities were much more likely to be participating in these type of behaviors. So if you think about purging or taking laxatives, the kids with disabilities were 4 times more likely to be participating in this kind of behavior. So 12% compared to 3%. They were also, you know, over 2 times more likely to be taking diet pills or powders or liquids, and twice as more likely to also be fasting within the past 24 hours. So this was really surprising to us. We didn't think that we would see a difference this large in these unhealthy dietary behaviors. Next, we ran some logistic regression models, and within these models, what we found were that some of those typical things that are associated with obesity among all adolescents, so adolescents who are obese, so physical activity predicted obesity among these adolescents, so kids with who were more likely to obese were participating in less physical activity. They were also watching more TV per day and more video games, so there was more screen time in kids who were obese. And kids who were obese were also more likely to be fasting and taking diet pills and powders and liquids. So we see a higher prevalence of physical inactivity. We see a higher prevalence of poor dietary intakes, and a higher prevalence of these unhealthy weight loss behaviors in kids with disabilities, but the strength of the association between these factors and obesity was the same for kids with and without disabilities. So disability didn't moderate the impact in our regression models. So the prevalence is increased, but the strength of the association was similar within these two groups. So in conclusion, what we found was it's clear that teens with disabilities have a higher prevalence of obesity. And this has been found previously in smaller studies, and this is one of the sort of largest studies to kind of look at this in a national sample of kids. And this increase in obesity is coincided with decreased physical activity levels, slightly worse dietary habits, and most surprising, these increases in unhealthy weight loss behaviors. And so adolescents with disabilities sort of desiring to lose weight might have limited access to physical activity opportunities and dietary choices, and thus might be left with these more extreme measures to try to lose weight. So as we develop obesity treatment and prevention programs, it's really critical, I think, at this stage to target and understand these unhealthy weight loss behaviors in this population and to understand the motivation for these behaviors. And is it that other avenues of weight loss are not open to these kids, and so they're participating in these unhealthy behaviors? And so future research should really deal with the challenge of measurement of obesity. So there's a lot of discussion in the literature on what does obesity mean for adolescents with disabilities, and it might mean different things for different disability types. And we might not be adequately measuring heights and weights in these kids. So these kids are self-reporting heights and weights, but that means that, you know, they got to a pediatrician and someone measured their height and weight, and whether that was appropriate or not, appropriately measured or not, we don't really know. And so a focus on measurement of obesity and, you know, is it that 95th percentile, is that the correct measurement for defining obesity in this population? And then really understanding differences across types of disability. So we weren't able to tease out types of disability since that we just had those broad sort of two questions within this sample. But, you know, examining whether or not you see these relationships in different, across different types of disabilities, I think would be interesting. And then really The inclusion of children with disabilities in health promotion programs, and especially those targeting obesity reduction and increased physical activity. And we need to sort of work towards a more inclusive model within that framework. Thank you very much for your time. I'll take questions. Questions? Yes.
Did you see any differences between the two disability types that you were able to look at, between the social and emotional disabilities?
So we haven't looked at that yet. What we sort of started teasing out, we tried to look at gender differences and race-ethnic differences first. So within gender groups, we didn't see any differences between males and females. So for kids with disabilities, both males and females are participating in these unhealthy weight loss behaviors, similar prevalence, which we thought was really interesting, that even the males, and even the males sort of tended to desire to lose weight and were participating in these, in purging. And so we looked at that first, but we haven't sort of teased out the physical versus emotional disability, but that's what we're going to do next. Thanks for the question. Yes. So we just looked at those respondents in the four states because they had the disability question. But we could sort of reference, and I think that's a good point, reference the kids without disabilities across the other sort of all 50 states and see kind of within if the kids without disabilities in those four states are similar to the national population. But we didn't do that. Yeah, so this is kind of a limited sample of kids with disabilities in that they did have to actually be in inclusive classrooms and be able to answer the questions unassisted. So it sort of ignores that whole spectrum of disability where kids would need some assistance in. Yes, so the two questions were these two... right here. So they were, do you have an emotional problem or a learning disability? And so so the kid would just respond yes or no to an emotional problem or learning disability. And then the physical disability. And it's left up to the child to self-report the disability information too. I think there's a movement towards including maybe more disability questions. I know the BRFIS data is including additional disability questions, and hopefully the YRBS data will too, so that we can start sort of understanding these kind of the prevalence of these behaviors within different disability groups.